For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, here with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, and number 49 in our list of top views by country, which is the land of the morning calm, or South Korea. Okay, technically that nickname belonged to all of Korea, but there's nothing calm about the maniacal regime in the north, where they don't allow our videos, whereas in the south, the national anthem contains hibiscus. Very soothing. Oh, and before I forget, we do appreciate people asking to be our friends on Facebook, but frankly, we're too small a team to monitor that many social media inputs, so we ignore those requests. And if you have something to say, please email us or comment on our videos from South Korea or wherever you may be. Unless it's really rude and incoherent, in which case message us on Facebook so we can ignore you more efficiently. Now, speaking of rankings, our own nation of Canada has seen a sudden gust of patriotism, or something resembling it, in the face of Donald Trump's annexation musings and tariff measures, a gust that has included an apparent determination to start taking the economy seriously. As well we might, since if you rank Canadian provinces and U.S. states by median employment earnings, we sweep the cellar, 51st through 60th spots. That's right. Even our most prosperous jurisdiction, which is Alberta, is below all of theirs, including Mississippi, the butt of innumerable jokes, but we're the butt of this one. And curiously, in the course of this elbows-up phenomenon, which didn't put a stop to the elite's land acknowledgments that the whole place is stolen and stinks, our fossil fuel sector suddenly became conventional energy and was respectable again. Or was it? On March 18th, a group of hopeful Canadian energy company leaders, presidents, CEOs, executive chairmen, and so forth, wrote a letter to leaders of Canada's four main federal political parties, urging them to seize the moment and start developing Canada's clean, reliable oil and gas. In return, former Environment Minister Jonathan Wilkinson gave them a brisk smackdown, reminding them that they too had endorsed the notion of a climate crisis and urged strong action, including carbon taxes to reduce emissions. Proving once again that he who would sup with the devil must have a long spoon, even when seeking morsels of his own goose that he cooked himself. The letter did its best to be ingratiating, like too much output from oil company PR departments, again endorsing the climate crisis before asking for streamlined project approvals and an end to, quote, the federal government's unlegislated cap on emissions, end quote, and the, quote, federal carbon levy on large emitters, end quote. Alas, Wilkinson's response, presumably approved by his new boss and our new Prime Minister, Mark Carney, snarled back that, quote, I read with interest, and I must say with disappointment, your letter of March 18th, 2025, end quote. And then, after the usual political self-praise and a sneer at streamlining approvals, and a boast about massive tax handouts, which in Canada take the place of market processes in boosting prosperity, productivity, and investment, which is why all three are in the tank here, he chewed up their PR plan and spat it back at them. Quote, climate change is real, and it continues to represent an existential threat to the future of the human race. Simply closing your eyes, or pointing out that poverty in parts of the world is also a problem, does not and should not let the sector off the hook, end quote. And he was just warming up, because he went on, quote, in the past, there were some who questioned the sincerity of you and other oil and gas sector executives when they said they were truly committed to addressing carbon emissions. These observers will be emboldened today as a result of your letter's call to eliminate the industrial carbon price, a price which originated in Alberta under a conservative government, and a price which many of the authors of your letter have long and publicly supported, end quote. Gotcha. And for good measure, he then accused them of disloyalty. Quote, it is disappointing to see the CEOs of major Canadian energy companies seemingly looking to profit from actions being taken south of the border after spending millions of dollars over the past few years speaking to your sector's commitment to environmental sustainability. You arrive here, end quote. So, yet again, making bedfellow of serpent is no protection against snakebite. And yes, you were warned by us. And now, a word from our sponsor, which as always is you. Because at the Climate Discussion Nexus, we don't get lavish government money. We're not backed by huge foundations. We're crowdfunded. We're dependent on your one-time or monthly contributions, including now the thanks button on YouTube, if that's where you're watching us, to put out the newsletter, to make these videos, and to keep pushing back against climate alarmist idiocy. I actually think the battle is going quite well, but it's not won yet, so please help us push on to the finish line. In the newsletter, we also discussed a mysterious blackout at London's massive Heathrow Airport, Europe's busiest and a global hub, which caused chaos for travelers worldwide. But what many of those travelers may not know is that whatever caused the initial fire, the loss of power was long and devastating because the greeny virtue signalers there had ditched fast, reliable, backup diesel power for sluggish, feeble biomass that wasn't even designed to replace the main system, just supplement it, while also rushing into solar and EVs. So, how do you like that green energy transition now? Positively takes your flight away, doesn't it? In the newsletter, we also followed up, with some schadenfreude, our discussion the week before about a lawsuit by Energy Transfer against Greenpeace over its involvement in protests in North Dakota. And we're following up because a jury promptly found Greenpeace USA liable on all counts, and Greenpeace International and Greenpeace Fund Incorporated liable on some, and awarded a whopping $666.9 million US, the bulk of it against Greenpeace USA. The latter responded ataxically that it now faced bankruptcy and that its work, quote, is never going to stop, end quote. And naturally, the New York Times Climate Forward piece on the verdict threw in, quote, Energy Transfer's co-founder and board chairman, Kelsey Warren, is an ally and donor to President Trump, end quote. But you can boo Trump all you like. It still turns out that winning in court what you can't get at the ballot box is all fun and games until some environmentalist loses a suit. In the newsletter, we also praised yet another piece of archival work by Tony Heller, who unearthed a chart from National Geographic in 1976 showing that it warmed rapidly in the early 20th century to a peak just before 1940, so yes, those oh-so-hot 1930s, and then plunged. The chart even says, quote, downtrend of temperature since 1938 has come nearly halfway back to the chill of the Little Ice Age 300 years ago, end quote. But now NASA and the NOAA have adjusted away such things, and National Geographic 2 has dropped them down the memory hole. Or unfortunately for them, Heller is waiting. Meanwhile, here on the surface, with a hat tip to Parker Gallant, a new report from the Alberta Electric System Operator says that yes, people like Bjorn Lomborg and CDN are right that alternative energy is more expensive and less reliable than the unicorn whisperers keep claiming. The most energy-rich province in this country, amazingly, quote, is at risk of power outages by the mid-2030s as a result of the federal government's clean electricity regulations, end quote. So, our federal government finally did get something done, but as usual, there's no way to make it sound like an achievement. Oh, and from our file of news stories explaining how everything, including the kitchen sink and the faucets, were ruined by climate change, we present, quote, 18 factors driving extreme weather events in the 21st century, end quote, and, quote, 18 shocking effects of melting ice sheets on global weather, end quote, and, who knows, 18 reasons why 18 sounds spuriously precise, unlike suspiciously round 20. In the newsletter, we also note that, tired of killing us all by weakening the AMOC, alarmists have turned on the ACC, that's the Antarctic Circumpolar Current, or turned it off, because in another case of climate change causing climate change, aka tipping points, all of them disastrous, it seems, quote, the accelerating melt of Antarctica's ice sheet, end quote, which isn't even happening, is weakening the current, which in turn could, drumroll please, quote, accelerate ice loss, end quote, which in turn could be, we must keep our eyes open. Mind you, we doubt the current is doing much of anything out of the ordinary. But here we also remind you of a point made by Javier Vinos in Solving the Climate Puzzle, that if the ACC actually does weaken so that Antarctica's climate becomes less isolated from the rest of the planet, the result could be a deep cooling rather than a warming as more heat reaches the South Pole and is then radiated off into space during the Southern Hemisphere winter. And speaking of not warming, Inside Climate News offers false hope in an email subject lined, quote, how to preserve the world's largest ice rink as winters shrink, end quote. That rink being the world-famous in Canada, Rideau Canal Skateway. But their giant outdoor heat pump solution wouldn't work even if they were able to pry us from Jack Frost's clutches, despite the Weather Network assuring us on March 20th that, got it here somewhere. What's this? 40 centimeters of snow to blanket parts of Ontario with a major cool down, end quote, which followed a warning that, quote, winter and severe storms target the Great Lakes, end quote. Now, from ice to fire. Because apparently one major problem with lithium battery fires is that all that toxic smoke can make people forget how good EVs are for the planet. For instance, referring to a massive EV battery fire at Moss Landing in California, Heatmap agonizes, quote, is the California battery fire an East Palestine moment, end quote? In case you never had one of those, or are wondering how we suddenly got to the Middle East, actually East Palestine is a town in Ohio, where a freight train derailed in 2023 while carrying hazardous materials, triggering a toxic fire that burned for days, releasing, among other things, phosgene gas, a common chemical weapon during the First World War. We were going to say a popular chemical weapon, but for obvious reasons it wasn't really. And, for obvious reasons, that incident caused an outcry over safety and promises from railroads to mend their ways. But when it's EV batteries, hush. Even if, say, some activists deliberately ignited Teslas to underline their open-minded commitment to compassion and decency. Or not, because there does seem to be this weird worldwide pushback against such lovely clean energy that burns you up while asphyxiating you. In the newsletter, we also continue our Look It Up series on the tornadoes to which the United States is uniquely prone and has been since long before whenever it is that man-made climate change allegedly hit. So, this week we started with an overview essay by Roger Pilkey Jr., provocatively titled, quote, What the Media Won't Tell You About Tornadoes, end quote. Plot spoiler, everything. And then we tell you how you can look up some of the key data yourself, showing why the experts in the field have concluded that tornado trends in this century are going down, not up. Now, it is true that the damage is increasing. But as Pilkey Jr. keeps pointing out, if the damage in dollars is adjusted for the growth in population and in the size of the economy, then that trend goes down too. And you can look it all up at the U.S. National Centers for Environmental Information website. And another thing, an important and often neglected detail in the global warming story is that when climate models are run far into the future, they say that increasing CO2 in the atmosphere causes little warming. The reason they think there's going to be a problem is that what then happens is that slightly warmer air causes more evaporation, and then the rise in atmospheric water vapor dramatically amplifies the initial impact, water being, after all, a far more powerful greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. Unfortunately, or fortunately, if for some reason you don't want a disaster here, the latest data show that the amount of water evaporating off the oceans is actually going down rather than up. Dang, climate just won't obey the computers again. And now some bad news from the CO2science.org archive. The plant Conium maculatum earned its place in history as the deadly brew drunk by Socrates to comply with the death sentence passed on him by an Athenian court. And that once famous event occurred long before all the extra CO2 was in the air. So philosophers beware. According to CO2 Science, in 2007 there was an experiment in which hemlock was exposed to 300 parts per million of extra CO2 and its biomass increased by 21% as a result. There was only one such experiment, which we hope doesn't mean the scientists involved got their teacups mixed up. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, warning, as always, not to rally around the white flag. That's right.